From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Hey, happy, happy Tuesday. That's right, it is June 9th, 2015, and you are tuned into Current Sports with me, Al Martin. We have a fantastic show in store for you all. I'm excited because for only the second time here on WKAR's Current Sports, we will invite Eric Rutland, who is the head coach of the minor league soccer team right here in Lansing. That's right, Lansing United. Eric Rutland. That's right, Eric will join me on the air to talk about this year, his second season, actually, with this incredible soccer club. Of course, the U.S. Women's National Team, they have begun its quest to capture a World Cup championship. It's really interesting because if you look at their world ranking, they are ranked number 2 in the world, folks. We'll compare women's national soccer here in the United States to that of the men's team. You don't want to miss that chat. We'll also embrace debate with Top 5 Tuesday. Who exactly are the top 5 athletes in the world today? We'll recap last night's NHL finals action as well as take your calls and so much more all the way up until 2 p.m. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners again for this Tuesday, June 9th. All right, folks, let's start with some big news concerning the Detroit Red Wings. Jeff Blashill was officially named as the new head coach of the Wings this morning around 11 a.m. Now, Blashill has spent the last 3 years coaching the Grand Rapids Griffins, Detroit's top farm club, after serving as one of Mike Babcock's assistant coaches in 2011 and 2012. Now, he led the Griffins to the 2013 Calder Cup Championship during his first year in Grand Rapids. He was the AHL Coach of the Year the following year and led the club to the conference finals this season. A pretty good hire, if you ask me. We'll have more discussion on Blashill becoming the new head coach of the Red Wings in just a sec. Arnie Kander, who has worked for the Detroit Pistons for 23 years, informed the organization that he will resign when his contract expires on June 30th. Pistons announced that yesterday. Now, he spent the majority of that time as the Pistons' strength and conditioning coach before becoming the team physical therapist for the first year of Stan Van's regime as president and coach. Now, Kander was hired in 1992 when the team was owned by Bill Davidson. Well, the start of the MLB draft took place yesterday. Bo Burrows, a right-handed pitcher from Weatherford, Texas High School, was taken with the 22nd overall pick to the Detroit Tigers. The Tigers also drafted TCU left-handed pitcher Tyler Alexander with the 65th overall pick in the second round. The Tigers selected Tennessee outfielder Kristen Stewart with the 34th pick overall. Now, the Tigers received that pick as compensation for losing Max Scherzer to, of course, the Washington Nationals. All right, DJ Davis tied a franchise record with, get this, 8 RBIs. Are you kidding me? Yeah, and the Lansing Lucknuts finished their 6-game homestand with a 12-4 victory against the Peoria Chiefs Monday at Cooley Law School Stadium. Davis's 8 RBIs ties him with Ryan Gripp for the most a Lucknuts player has had in a game. Gripp had 8 RBIs on April 15th, 15 years ago, back in 2000. Impressive stuff. All right, and a few area teams remain in contention for state high school titles heading into the final week of competition. Here's a look at today's schedule. In baseball, Division II quarterfinal at University of Michigan, DeWitt versus Adrian, that takes place at 6 p.m. Division III quarterfinal at Davenport University, Lansing Catholic versus Buchanan at 5 p.m. And Division IV quarterfinal at Calvin College, Potterville takes on Muskegon Catholic Central at 5 p.m. In softball, Division II quarterfinal at U of M, Portland versus Carlton Airport at 6 p.m. And in soccer, Division II semi at Grand Rapids Christian, DeWitt takes on Richland Gull Lake at 6 p.m. All right, Cedric Paquette's goal with 3 minutes and 11 seconds to go in the third period capped a thrilling 3-2 win in Game 3 over the Chicago Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup Finals, giving the Young Bolts a 2-1 series lead over the favorite Vets. Game 4 takes place tomorrow night at 8 p.m. All right, and according to the NBA, referees Zach Zarba, Scott Foster, and Tony Brothers missed some calls during their last 2 minutes of the Cleveland Cavaliers' 95-93 victory over the Golden State Warriors on Sunday. Now, with a minute and 37 remaining in OT, the NBA said the Warriors' guard or forward, Andre Iguodala, wasn't called for making contact with LeBron James' arm on a shot attempt. However, the league also admitted on Monday that James had moved his pivot foot before the shot attempt and it should have been a traveling call. Another missed call that the NBA admitted came with 45 seconds remaining in the game, as the NBA said that Warriors and former MSU great Draymond Green should have been called for grabbing LeBron's shoulder and impeding James' ability to jump during the jump ball situation. And last but not least, the U.S. national soccer team beat Australia 3-1 in the team's opening match of World Cup play yesterday. The Americans' next game is against Sweden on Friday at 9 p.m. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open if you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything we discuss here on the show today. The number is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, I think it's about that time to start the show. Today's current sports. Welcome to the show. As always, I am the man behind the mic, your host, Al Martin. What a game last night, huh? What a game. I'm still wiping the crust out my eyes from watching that thrilling game between, of course, the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Chicago Blackhawks. Tampa Bay, the Young Bucks. How about that? The Young Bolts, as I stated in the Quicket Atliners, now grabbing a 2-1 series lead over Chicago, man. Fun game. I tell you what, watching the Stanley Cup Finals and also the NBA Finals, it has been two thrilling series that will keep you glued to your television, folks. And speaking of hockey, big news today. And again, I want to get your thoughts on this because for the most part, I'm seeing on my Twitter page left and right, I got a few texts from you guys out there that are diehard hockey fans. And for the most part, many of you are smiling if you are a Detroit Red Wings fan. Seeing as though Detroit, again, in my eyes and in many of you guys out there eyes, you feel as though they made the right hire here. Jeff Blashill, if you haven't heard, he has been named as the head coach, the new head coach of the Detroit Red Wings in a press conference that took place around 11 a.m. Now, Blashill's resume is quite impressive. He has actually spent the last 3 years coaching the Red Wings farm team, the Grand Rapids Griffins, Detroit's top farm club. He served one of Mike Babcock's assistants. Of course, Mike Babcock, he took a job to Canada. I think it was the right move considering the money that they offered him. I mean, 8 years, $50 million, hard to turn down. Hard to turn down, folks. But he was actually one of Mike's assistant coaches back in 2011 to 2012. He also led the Griffins to the 2013 Calder Cup Championship during his first year in Grand Rapids and was the AHL Coach of the Year the following season and led the club to the conference finals this year. And, you know, so for the most part, you know, this was the expected hire. You know, when I heard the news about Blashill being named this morning, that news actually broke yesterday afternoon. I was not surprised whatsoever. It's what everyone expected. He has some pretty cool local ties right here to the state of Michigan. He's born in Detroit, he's actually – he grew up in Sioux Falls, St. Marie, excuse me. And it has it's had a really impressive resume overall. And if you look at it, just to really dive into a few reasons why I do think Jeff Blashill is the right man. First off, numero uno, folks, he is a winner. Again, you know, he guided the Indiana Ice to the USHL Championship back in 2009. He led Western Michigan to a berth in the NCAA tourney. And, of course, directing the Grand Rapids Griffins to a Calder Cup. And folks, when you look at coaches who have made that jump from the AHL to the NHL, for many, you know, it's kind of one of those moments. And you can equate this to a plethora of sports. You know, when you talk about a college basketball coach trying to make that leap from coaching college basketball to college, to NBA basketball, excuse me. And the same thing with the NFL. I mean, right now we're seeing an individual in Jim Harbaugh out in Ann Arbor, you know, experiment with that move, actually he's making a move down from going from the NFL to now coaching college football. But anytime you make a move, whether it be moving up to coach professional sports or moving to the ranks of college sports, there's going to be an adjustment period. But there is a history of successful AHL coaches that have moved up to the NHL and found instant success right off the bat. Interesting article, I think a very well-written article by Jeff Seidel, who's been here on Current Sports before, a good friend of the show. He really breaks down the reasons as to why Blashill is the right man for the job. And on that same point, when looking at AHL coaches that have made that move to the NHL, and, you know, this wasn't a period where it took them a few seasons to get their feet wet, you know, to get adjusted to the water and the temperature. You know what I mean? There wasn't a few seasons here. There wasn't a learning curve here. But there was an immediate success rate that transcended for these individuals. The Penguins did it with Dan Bylsma, if you remember. And it paid off with the 2009 Stanley Cup. The Capitals did it with Bruce Boudreau, who was voted the NHL's Coach of the Year in 2008. The Lightning is doing it right now with John Cooper. You're seeing it. You're seeing that dividend playoff right now in the Stanley Cup Finals as we speak. So there are coaches that have done this and have had instant success, folks. Now, I found this reason also to support the case as well. The Wings right now are in a transition period. Blashill, he learned how to coach several types of teams in constant transition, folks, while coaching the Griffins. Anytime you talk about, and you can equate this to the game of baseball. I mean, there's constantly being players pulled from your roster, moved up to the pros to help a team, of course, in this case, the Red Wings. Your roster's constantly being tweaked with, and individuals who play for your squad are either sinking or swimming. And some are getting cut throughout the year. Two seasons ago, Blashill, he coached a roster that stayed relatively consistent, at least for the first half of the year, because of the NHL lockout, if you remember. And last season, the Wings had a ton of injuries, which forced several Griffins to move up to Detroit. And Blashill, an interesting quote here I'm reading, he said it was like a revolving door, looking at his season last year. So if you can find consistent success when your roster is constantly being tweaked at, pulled at, and changed, that speaks volumes to the type of coach that you are. Jeff Blashill has certainly dealt with that. I think it's the right move, folks. I think it's the right move. I want to get your thoughts on it. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I want to get your thoughts also because when looking at the Detroit Red Wings and I guess you can say their recent stint. And their recent quandaries and quarrels when you talk about their Stanley, just trying to get to a Stanley Cup and to win a Stanley Cup. Because we all know Detroit has that aura. It is hockey town. You know, when you put on that Detroit Red Wings red and white jersey, you are expected to excel. You know, I equate the Detroit Red Wings to be like, you know, the Dallas Cowboys of the NFL or the Los Angeles Lakers of the NBA. You are expected to compete for championships each and every year. And that respect, the fan base expects that out of you too. And when you don't, you better believe that the hammer comes down very, very hard. Now, I do believe that we've been giving Mike Babcock and the Detroit Red Wings a bit of a pass these past few years because they have been, you know, going back to that word transition, they have been going through a bit of a transition period. The squad has become younger. They don't have that storied veteran leadership that they had in the past in the glory days of the 90s. But this team has kept the most successful postseason streak in North American sports alive. Folks, I have been on this earth, and I love to state this because it kind of puts it in perspective. I've been on this earth for 24 years. I was born October 7th, 1990. That is when the incredible streak, playoff streak, of the Detroit Red Wings began. And since 1990, folks, they have not seen a year where they did not make the playoffs. That's unbelievable. It's the longest streak, the longest postseason streak in North American sports history. So it comes with high expectations. And seeing how this team was basically, it has been now for, you could argue, for the past, 3 to 4 years now, limping its way into the playoffs. Not just getting there. Again, you just can't get there if you're a Detroit Red Wing or a fan of this squad. You're not satisfied with just getting to the playoffs. You had to make deep runs. And Detroit just simply hasn't done that. I always bring up the stat that they haven't made it past the second round since 2009. It's more than 5 years ago, folks. And you kind of got, you know, this aura, this sense. And you heard it when we had, you know, Drew Miller. Of course, of the Detroit Free Press, when he had him on to talk about just really where the mindset of the Detroit Red Wings is at right now, and the aura and the attitude, the emotion surrounded around this club, and Drew talked about how this squad had sort of a feeling that when looking at Mike Babcock, that he was kind of just going through the motions. You know, it was just another year for him. And every once in a while, when you start to go through the motions as a coach or as a team, or you have that type of aura, you sometimes need a jolt of energy, renewed energy. And a new coach, a new hire, can certainly bring that attitude and bring that jolt of energy. So I think you may see a renewed spirit with this Detroit Red Wings squad. Jeff Blashill is a guy who has proven himself wherever he has gone, and he certainly deserves a shot. He deserves a shot, folks, in the NHL. Getting it with one of the most storied franchises, probably the most storied franchise right now in all of hockey, with the Detroit Red Wings, yeah, it's going to be a tall order. And I think it would be unfair. It's going to be unfair, even though I just listed off a few coaches who have made that transition, a few AHL coaches who have moved up to the NHL and had instant success. I think any coach who is coming into a situation where I'm not saying that the Red Wings, I want to temper this by saying this. I'm not saying that the Detroit Red Wings are at the bottom barrel of the league. We all know they're not, folks. But you're coming into a situation where the Detroit Red Wings have not fared well in the playoffs more than 6 years now. Again, they haven't gotten past the second round since 2009. Blashill is coming into a situation where the ceiling certainly and the needle certainly could be moved in many aspects, in many regards, when it comes to how well this team is crafted. A lot of adjustments have to be made on this squad, but he's coming into a situation that has a lot of potential. That's the big word here. But it would be unfair, folks, to expect that Blashill can turn this thing around next year. Give him some time. He's a young guy who has proven himself. And it's going to take, for me, if I had to put a number on it, I say you got to give Blashill, give him 2, maybe 3 years. And then we could see the Red Wings legitimately start competing. The pieces are there. But it's about cultivating that young talent. They got a lot of pieces here, folks, but it's going to take some time. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's actually go to line one right now. I believe we have a caller on line one. How you doing, and welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, how you doing today? Looks like it's going to be a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day, my man.
we live in a world, and most people either half empty or half full. Individuals, I'm a half-empty individual, but I know that about myself, so I guess I can at least be open and honest. The Red Wings are excited, happy they brought in their new coach, and I think he'll be successful, as you brought up. Mm-hmm. You know, the track record is there. But let's be honest, what's more important, a new coach or having your captain basically go the entire playoffs and not show up? What's more important, a new coach or having a goaltender that I think you're committed to for another, 3 years at $5 million, who probably isn't your number one goaltender anymore?
Right.
What's more important, a new coach or Steven Weiss, who your general manager signed to a contract, and I don't know if he will be on the team, but he'll do more for another team than what he did for the team this past season. Again, I understand today's the sunshine and lollipops day in Red Wing land, but if they're the organization that you claim there to be, and yeah, 23 years is a great record, haven't won one in a while, but, you know, just because they got a new coach doesn't mean, I'm heard that, you know, he's going to work so well with the youngsters and they're going to play really hard for him. Yeah, that's great, but what if the older guys don't like him and don't play hard for him? And to me, it all depends on what you're selling. And optimism sells, especially with fan bases. They love homerism. They want to hear how great their team is and how bad the other team is. But a new coach isn't going to fix some of the real problems that this franchise has. If you put a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, what did you do?
Right. And you know what, my man, when looking at it, of course, the Detroit Red Wings had to make a hire here. And because, of course, Mike decided to leave, take his talents out to Toronto, he couldn't turn down that amount of money. So they had to make a hire here. So my question to you is, with those cores, I definitely agree. There are holes in this boat that need to be plugged and need to be plugged ASAP. Do you think this was the right hire at the end of the day? Do you think Jeff is the right man for the job, looking at what you just laid out?
I don't, because I think this team has issues that it's going to be very difficult. Not as a reflection of him being a bad coach, but he's not walking. I understand normally you're not going to get in a coach in an ideal situation because the former coach was either let go or fired because the team didn't perform well.
Right.
But this team has some real issues. I mean, again, I'm amazed that all these, again, and Red Wings love, hey, man, these young kids are going to love play. Great. That's great that they will. But that, like I said, you've got a captain who gave you nothing the second half of the season last year. You've got a goaltending controversy, whether you want to believe it or not, because no one's going to pay their backup goalie $5 million a year to sit. They're not going to do it. So they're either going to trade him and hope to get a lot for him, or maybe they trade him and find out that he really was the number one and they're stuck with the number two. So, yeah, I don't think his non-success, and like you said, in this organization, the Stanley Cup is the success. That's an awful high bar to set. And very few franchises in all of sports set it that high. But, you know, I'm just amazed that because a coach comes in, you know, a guy that's never coached the NHL, he's got some very, very real and difficult issues to deal with. And they didn't go away today just because they got a new coach.
Hey, I definitely agree with you, my man. Hey, great call. Appreciate it. Definitely. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I totally agree. I definitely agree, because I don't want to send the perception out there that the Detroit Red Wings, with the hire of Blashill, everything is going to be all right. We all know that, and that's why I say he's not coming to a situation that is quote-unquote ideal. And what I mean by ideal is, okay, he's coming into an organization that can win a Stanley Cup championship right now. There are question marks for the Detroit Red Wings. But, again, I believe that Jeff Blashill, being, you know, a young coach who has had this unbelievable track record of success, maybe not the NHL level, but in other realms of hockey, I think this renewed energy will transcend well to this squad. Again, yeah, you got a goaltending problem. Peter Mrazek, Jimmy Howard, Jimmy Howard goes down. Peter Mrazek comes in, has a few solid outings. But again, you know, he showed a little bit of that youth throughout the playoffs as well. Who's going to be a goalie next year? That's going to be a big, big question. And so we'll see. You know, we'll certainly see. But at the end of the day, the Detroit Red Wings had to make a move here. Their hand was forced. They gave, in my eyes, the ideal offer that they could give when looking at the situation financially when trying to get Mike Babcock to stay. Mike got a better deal. 8 years, $50 million. The Red Wings aren't competing with that. He's gone. So who do you hire? Why not hire the guy who has worked under the tutelage of Mike Babcock, who has won a Stanley Cup here in Detroit, who has won the Calder Cup in the AHL, who hasn't had a bad year as a head coach elsewhere other than the NHL? Why not take a shot on this young kid? Why not do it? 517-355-9527. I also want to get your thoughts really briefly here. Going back to our quick headliners, I found this kind of comical. And I do think at times the NBA does take an unfair rap when talking about its referees. Because statistically, I read an interesting article done by the Bleacher Report not too long ago, and they were kind of breaking down the number of missed calls. Now, they calculated that through very intricate stuff. I'll make sure to tweet the article later on after I get off the air. But they kind of broke down where exactly are the worst refs or the worst officials in professional and collegiate sports. And when looking at the NBA refs compared to college referees, did you know college referees actually blow more calls than NBA referees? I had no idea. And it's interesting. They bring up examples. They break down the numbers. It's a very intriguing article. But interesting, I'm bringing this up because the NBA yesterday, according to the NBA, referees Zach Zarba, Scott Foster, and the Tony Brothers, missed some calls during the last 2 minutes of the Cleveland Cavaliers and Golden State NBA Finals game that took place on Sunday night. Of course, the call that has been played over and over and over on national sports outlets from here to Mars was, of course, that play with a minute and 37 remaining. Andre Iguodala, he's guarding LeBron James, getting pretty physical with him. It definitely was a foul. LeBron drives, you know, a lot of contact is made. The referees let him play. Should have been a foul. But the league admits yesterday that James had actually moved his pivot foot before the shot attempt and that James should have been called, for travel before contact was even made. And we all know the NBA doesn't call traveling. So I think they were just kind of trying to justify why they didn't call the foul on Andre Iguodala during that play. And another blatant missed call happened to be, it came from Michigan State alum Draymond Green. Warriors forward Draymond Green should have been called for grabbing LeBron James' shoulder after impeding James' ability during a jump ball situation. Pretty blunt. LeBron did not like it at all. He went right to the referees after, and what happened was the ball goes up, and the thing in a jump ball situation, you cannot catch a jump ball. So the ball is tossed up. Draymond actually misses the tip. The ball comes down. He pulls LeBron James down, and the ball falls in the hands of LeBron. You can't do that. It's a violation. It ends up being the Golden State Warriors basketball. But if you look at the camera angle from the shot clock camera during the broadcast, you can see Draymond Green's left arm clearly pull LeBron James down. I thought it was pretty clever move. And we also saw the hard foul that Draymond Green gave LeBron James going up for a layup when he came in the paint. I love Draymond Green. He's physical. He's willing to do what it takes for his team, even if that means pushing the envelope of the rules. I liked it, but the NBA came out, and for whatever it's worth, the NBA came out and said, hey, we blew it. We got to do better. That doesn't give Golden State or the Cleveland Cavaliers a win at the end of the day. I don't know why they came and issued it. Just trying to cover their rear ends, if you ask me. Folks, phone lines are open again. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, I'll be chatting with Eric Rutland, who is the head coach for Lansing United. That's right, Lansing's very own minor league soccer team. You do not want to miss that chat. Let's hit our first break. You'll hear that chat in just a sec. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870.
Hi, I'm Warren Alney. On the next To the Point, a major political upset in one of America's key Middle East allies, Turkey's conservative President Erdogan has lost parliamentary seats to ethnic minorities and secular forces. Other NATO members want to know what that means for Turkey's role in the fight against ISIS in neighboring Syria. Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
To the Point today at 2 on AM 870 WKAR.
For keeping on top of the news.
You're listening to the BBC World Service.
I'm Robin Lustig.
I'm Julian Marshall.
This is Owen Bennett-Jones
with NewsHour.
For finding out what's happened.
They're out on the stage, the protest leaders, still trying to rally their supporters.
And for knowing why it's happened.
They've often then turned to the Taliban as another way of earning a living.
Stay in touch with the world with NewsHour from the BBC.
This afternoon at 4 on AM 870 WKAR.
All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Again, folks, I am your host, Al Martin. It's funny, I'm actually on Twitter. I'm on my phone as well. I got Facebook up. You guys know I love social media, and you guys are chiming in on the Jeff Blasher situation. And also, I got a tweet here from one of you guys that wants to know, where is Isaac's voice at? You guys are wondering, where exactly is Isaac, who, of course, is our regular Current Sports radio engineer? Well, I tell you what, folks, you may be a bit jealous when you hear this answer. Isaac right now is in the British Virgin Islands. He just texted me. He's actually listening to the show out there. He wished he could be with us, but again, he's on vacation. He was off last week, and he's off this week. He's in the British Virgin Islands. Last week, he was in New Orleans, where he's actually born and raised and from, checking out the fam out there. So Isaac will be back with us next week, but I would be remiss if I did not shout out our fill-ins for the entire week, folks. Actually, yesterday, my man Drew Henderson did a great job holding it down behind the glass, and also Drew Hill. That's right, folks, Drew Hill. Drew and Drew, it's the Drew and Drew show throughout the entire week. So big shout out to those individuals. They are doing one fantastic job. All right, well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. Now, coming off a 3-0 loss to AFC Ann Arbor on Sunday, Lansing United, Lansing's very own minor league soccer team, sits in second place of the NPSL Midwest Region Soccer Conference, right behind Detroit City FC. The team is 4-2-2 and has a total of 8 points. Veteran soccer coach Eric Rutland returns as Lansing United's head coach and general manager for the second season. In his first season at the helm, Rutland led the club to a 10-3-4 record and a Midwest Region Championship. Incredible first year for Lansing United. Rutland has coaching experience in the U.S. of A. and in England, serving as the head coach for Spring Arbor University from 2011 to 2012. Eric, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks a lot for joining me today. Now, Eric, first off, because the last time we had you on was actually a year from now. Last year in June, around the same time, talking about your first season under the helm of the head coach of Lansing United. First off, for those that are listening that may not know much about you, how did you end up as the head coach of Lansing United?
Good question. Through a series of networks, Jeremy Sampson reached out to me, and I was able to sit down with him. And it just ended up working out at the end of the day for those guys to bring me in, and just grateful for the opportunity to be a part of the club.
Truly an impressive resume, Eric, when you look at the different places that you've coached. You were on the staff for Crewe Alexandra FC in England from 04 to 05, serving under Dario Grotti, one of the most respected coaches in Europe in youth player development. Again, as I just stated in the intro, you've coached here in the U.S. of A., also in England. I got to ask you, Eric, out of all the places you've coached and been under tutelage at, what has been your favorite place?
That's a tough one. I mean, each place I've been has just had a different dynamic, and, I've been able to work with a lot of great people along the way. So, obviously, what we've got going on in Lansing is definitely been a highlight. We've had some success. I've had the opportunity to work with some really nice players and, you know, the community has definitely gotten behind what we're trying to accomplish. So, you know, it's been a great stop for me along my soccer journey. Obviously, the experiences over in England for me were, at the time, life-changing. You know, just being able to work with the pro club day in and day out and see how soccer operates at that level. So, you know, for me, I'm just fortunate to have some good opportunities and some good experience and now able to share that with the guys in Lansing. So,
yeah, Eric, and you know what? When talking about the popularity of soccer here in America, it seems to be growing each and every year. Of course, you know, last year with the World Cup taking place, I mean, the phenomenon of that was unbelievable. I mean, I would go to different restaurants and different bars here in Lansing, and there would be big gatherings to watch USA's games in the World Cup. And now we're seeing, you know, with the U.S. Women's National Team, they have now begun their quest to capture a World Cup championship. The buzz is starting to rev up once again. For you, you know, someone who has, you know, coached in England, what's the difference in soccer culture in the U.S. compared to where you were in England?
I think the biggest change in the culture over there is obviously soccer is the number one sport, and there aren't as many competing sports at the professional level. So when you look at soccer in the U.S., you know, you're competing with American football, baseball, basketball. You know, a sports fan can be drawn in a number of different directions. But it's actually, like you mentioned, very cool to see a shift right now in the culture of American sports where professional soccer is really starting to find its own niche and it's breaking through in that market. So, you know, the expansion of the MLS, USL Pro, which is, you know, a third division hierarchy of U.S. soccer, is really taking a chunk out of the market now as well. And for us, you know, we're trying to benefit off of that, obviously, in our community level in Lansing. And I think you'll just continue to see the popularity grow in time as these clubs are now becoming more marketable, more appealing, and really giving fans a great experience when they come out to watch games.
Eric Rutland, the head coach of the Lansing United soccer team. Eric, 10-3-4 record in a Midwest Region Championship in your first year. The success of that first year, what was that like for you?
It was a great experience. You know, we obviously had some hopes and expectations in year one, and I think we kind of overachieved and exceeded all of those expectations. So, you know, for the players that were with us, it was great for those guys, and it really set up a lot of our players to have success in their fall seasons in 2014, and then we were able to push a couple players into professional teams, you know, who are currently pros right now. So, you know, it was very rewarding just from a results standpoint and, you know, bringing some hardware home to the club. But it was also great to see a lot of our players that were with us benefit, you know, from the team's success, and they've pushed on to higher levels of the game now.
Now, looking at your squad this year, you guys are 10 games into the season. How pleased are you with the way this season has gone thus far?
You know, we're pretty happy with where we are. Obviously, we could always do better. You know, we've dropped points in two of our MPSL matches. You know, we drew instead of winning, which those results can be disappointing. But, you know, we've had to juggle some variables this year that we did not have to work with last year. You know, our early season preparations really revolved around our run in the U.S. Open Cup. And we did have a bit of success in that competition. So that has actually taken away a little bit from some of our, you know, MPSL preparations early on. And now, obviously, we've shifted our focus into the MPSL matches. But, you know, dealing with what we had to deal with, I think the boys have responded and done very well. And, you know, obviously now our focus is just on our remaining MPSL matches.
Eric, do you think this year's team is better than last year's or has the potential to be so?
Yeah, I think from an overall talent perspective, the pool of players we have to work with this year is better than last year. You know, what still remains to be determined is, do we have those one or two players that can really put the team on their back and carry us far, you know, into the MPSL playoffs? And so last year we had a couple of guys emerge around 5-6 games into the season where we really felt like those players could put the team on their back and help us accomplish a lot. And so, you know, 4 games into the MPSL right now, we're still kind of waiting for those guys to emerge in the team. And I think we have, you know, the talent. It's just which players actually have that personality to break in and get that job done for us.
Eric, looking at the schedule here, the second game of the year, you guys actually were able to pull out a 3-0 win over AFC Ann Arbor this past Sunday. The Tide certainly certainly changed. On Sunday, you guys fell 3-0 to AFC Ann Arbor. What was the difference in that game on Sunday for you guys?
Yeah, the big difference was in that early game, you know, we played kind of our top team against AFC Ann Arbor because we were preparing for our U.S. Open Cup run. Whereas this past weekend, we played our top team on the Friday night match against Pittsburgh in our MPSL game, and we sent our reserve team to play against Ann Arbor on Sunday. So, you know, it was a good chance for really 18 different guys to get a game in on Sunday. And they played well. You know, we had a lot of possession. You know, we had a couple mistakes to give away goals and obviously couldn't create a goal going forward. But, you know, it was nice. We were able to play 18 guys on Friday and then a different 18 guys against Ann Arbor on Sunday because it was a midseason friendly.
Now, Eric, I want to change the dynamic of the conversation here. And I want to talk about soccer. I want to kind of go back to the perception and the popularity of soccer internationally here. Now, of course, with the U.S. Women's National Team beginning its quest to capture a World Cup championship yesterday, of course, they beat Australia 3-1 in the opening match yesterday and are ranked number 2 in the world. Now, on the contrary, the men's national soccer team is ranked 27th in the country. When looking at United States soccer, comparing the genders of men's and women's, why do you think the dynamic is so different in how good on a national scheme both of these teams are?
Yeah, I think when you look at the differences, you know, the U.S. was actually one of the first countries to really support women's soccer. So from day one, I think we were on the forefront as a country in kind of pushing the envelope with the women's game. And so you saw a lot of early success with our women's national team. And now, quite frankly, there are other countries around the world who have started to catch up to the U.S. You know, China's very strong, Brazil, Australia. Yeah, that was actually a huge win for us because they're one of the top nations in the world as well. So, and it's basically a reverse cycle that's happening on the men's side where, you know, historically speaking, we were one of the last countries to get serious about producing a quality U.S. men's national team. So we've been fighting an uphill battle, but there are a lot of really positive changes and good support and investments taking place on the men's side of our country right now. And I think you'll continue to see the U.S. men's national team grow and have success on an international stage.
And why do you think that? Why do you think the U.S. men's soccer team is sort of trending upward?
The reason being is for many years, the focus was just kind of at the top level of the U.S. men's national team. So there were a lot of focus once players made it to that stage. And what you're seeing right now is a shift of focus that's actually targeting the next generation of players. So U.S. soccer is spending a lot of resources on developing, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-old players that are the future generation of soccer. And when you look at the most successful countries in the world, you know, Germany, you know, Spain, Brazil, you know, the focus starts at a very young age. So players have a good technical base, they have good tactical understanding, and they have, you know, 12 or plus years to prepare to playing on an international stage. So the U.S. has finally caught grasp of that and again, is paying a lot of attention and, you know, is actually running a full-scale, you know, program right now starting at age 13 for the next generation of men's national team players.
That's fantastic stuff. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKR's Current Sports, we are talking with the head coach of the minor league soccer team right here in Lansing United. We're speaking with Eric Rutland. Now, Eric, I got to bring this up because it has been a topic of discussion day in, day out, week in, week out right here on Current Sports. Of course, I'm talking about the FIFA corruption case. Now, near the end of last month, 14 people indicted in connection with an investigation by the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, and the Internal Revenue Service Criminal Investigation Division into wire fraud, racketeering, and money laundering. For you, Eric, when you first heard this story, when you first saw it break, I want to know, what was your initial reaction first?
Well, I'd like to think it's the same as most people's. You don't want to believe it at first, right? You want to think that, you know, you're the game that you're in part of day in and day out is clean and people are in it for the right reasons. So that was my immediate reaction. And then the second thought is, wait a second, let's look into this and see what the facts are. And just like everybody else, you come to realize that, there's corruption in, I guess, most professional sports, most businesses, and soccer is definitely not immune to that.
Yeah, and of course, with Sepp Blatter, you know, stepping down as the president of FIFA, what do you think, first of all, what do you think this story does to the perception of soccer as a whole? And you know, what are your thoughts about Sepp Blatter stepping down? Did you see that one coming?
No, I didn't, to be honest, because, you know, right before he was reelected president, he basically said, you know, he's good to stay on. There's no reason for him to step down. And then, what, 10 days after he's named president again, he steps down, which kind of validates most of the evidence and facts that I think were brought to the forefront. So, you know, it's definitely disappointing, but I think FIFA just really needs to use this as an opportunity, you know, to set a new standard, to raise the bar, and then move FIFA in a more positive direction, and also hopefully try to create some transparency as well in regards to, you know, how World Cups are placed and how they're voted on. And, you know, it's really, I think they can take an opportunity to really move this thing in a positive direction and continue to grow the brand of soccer globally.
Eric, how bad do you think this hurts soccer?
You know, quite frankly, I don't think it does. I think right now when you look at soccer in the U.S., there's so much momentum just on a domestic stage with the growth of, you know, professional soccer and amateur soccer. You know, I think people read it and say, all right, let's see what happens. And because it's one of the first kind of, I guess, global phenomenons with FIFA, I'd like to think that most people are going to give them a second chance and, you know, give them the opportunity to make things right.
All right, Eric, before I let you get out of here, of course, you guys are now preparing for a match against the Madison 56ers. I love that name. I got to love that name. You guys got some time off. What's the preparation like for that game next week?
Yeah, we're actually, it's a down week for us this week. A lot of our guys are out of town or, you know, taking care of things on their own. And then we'll come back together as a group next week, Monday, and get prepared for that. And quite frankly, it's going to be a good trip for us. We have two games, one in Madison, Wisconsin, and then one out in Minneapolis. And really, it's a pivotal away trip for us where we've got to try to maximize points in both those games. And I know that those teams have not traveled well and gotten points on the road, but they're much, much stronger sides when they play at home because of their support and their player availability. So it's really a big week for us next week, and we're hopeful to pick up 6 points on the road.
Definitely wishing you guys all the luck in the world. Again, Eric Rutland, head coach of the Lansing United soccer team. Eric, thanks a lot for your time. You take care.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Al. Take care, guys.
All right, see you soon. All right, bye. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, it is Top 5 Tuesday, folks. I'm so excited. I love Top 5 Tuesday. I love it. It's one of my favorite segments that we do here on Current Sports. And today's Top 5 Tuesday is the top 5 athletes in the world today, right here on June 9th, 2015. Who are your top 5 athletes that are currently in active, I guess you can say? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. That's right. You hear the music. It is time for Top 5 Tuesday. Of course, you know, looking at some of the more heated segments that we've had here on the show, this is truly one of them. This and probably Barbershop Wednesday. Each and every Wednesday, we have an interesting debate topic to bring you all. And I tell you what, everyone has their top five list, you know, whether it be the top five point guards of all time, whether it be the top five Michigan State quarterbacks to ever hit the gridiron. We've had those debates, and it's garnered a lot of attention. And, you know, this is one that I really had to ponder because this was actually brought up. I want to shout out my friend Jay, who brought this one up. We were just chatting over the weekend as we watched sports, and we were just sitting there like, all right, Al, And he posed this question. He was like, Al, if you could choose the top five athletes in the world today, not of all time, we're not going back in history, so I can't pull out Michael Jordan, I can't pull out Magic, I can't pull out Barry Sanders, so on and so forth. But right now, today, on June 9th, 2015, who would your top five athletes be? And I had to take a pause and think about it. And the reason why he brought it up, because we were sitting there, you know, watching American Pharoah, which I think you can consider American Pharoah. You can consider a horse an athlete if they are in a competitive realm where they are competing for something, no matter who it may be, you know, human or animal alike. You can put that thing or individual in that conversation. In American Pharoah, again, folks, we saw history, and we absolutely went nuts when I saw American Pharoah pull off in the final stretch, pull away, and cross that finish line to become the first horse since 1978 to win a Triple Crown. I lost my mind. I lost my mind. I probably disturbed my neighbors. Apologies to my neighbors if you're listening out there. They probably aren't, but apologies to them anyway. I lost it because, again, I never thought that I would see a Triple Crown winner. I never thought. I thought it was one of those myths, one of those things we'd never see again, you know, first time. Again, we haven't seen this happen. 13 horses have tried up until American Pharoah, and 13 horses have failed. We saw it last year. I mean, the hype machine was turned up to 100 last year with California Chrome. And, of course, if you remember when California Chrome lost the Belmont Stakes, we all know the historic rant that the owner had, and it was an interesting argument because the owner, I'll tell you what, I will go back looking at what I said last year about the statements from California Chrome's owner concerning why we have not seen, at the time, I'm talking about prior to American Pharoah, we had not seen a horse win a Triple Crown. And the reason that he gave, if you didn't get to hear his rant, he brought up how horses who compete, you know, for a chance at winning any of the big three, being the Preakness, the first off the Kentucky Derby, then the Preakness in the Belmont Stakes, how some horses who don't compete in the Kentucky Derby or the Preakness, how those horses are allowed to compete at the Belmont Stakes. How horses basically skip, you know, one or two of the big three and can compete and possibly knock off a horse who has raced in all three, knock off a horse who may have won the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, knock off a horse who has a chance at the Triple Crown. He just didn't agree with it. He didn't agree with the fact that this horse is fresher and he's going against a horse who has raced in the previous two races. That's more wear and tear. It's not fair. And I sided with him. I could see that argument. I could certainly see that argument. Because, you know, I started to buy into, you know, the sulk. You know, the sulk of not having a Triple Crown winner since the 70s. Why is that so? Well, fresher horses are beating the horses who have much wear and tear on them. I don't think that's fair. You should run. If you're going to compete in any three of those, you have to compete in all three of those. You can't pick and choose. It's not right. But I truly think now, looking at American Pharoah, a horse who has proven that it is possible to do this, even though this it's very hard and very challenging to do it, you can still do this. I think you should leave it be. Because any horse, and let's say they did change the system. Let's say the board did say, okay, you have to race in all three in order to, you know, to compete in any of them. Let's say they didn't rule upon that. I think if you had a Triple Crown winner, and if you changed those rules and had a Triple Crown winner, you would have to put an asterisk next to any horse who participates in the competition in that fashion. It's one of those things, you know, being a traditionalist in sports, it's on that same discussion, folks. It's traditional. You can't just change it out of nowhere. I think it would take away from the accomplishment that the now previous Triple Crown winners have had. Those Triple Crown winners who had to go against horses who were fresher, quote unquote, and still won a Triple Crown, it takes away from a horse who competed against horses who ran in all three, if you were to change the rules. And in many ways, I think that fact makes it more special. And that's why I'm actually at my number five, American Pharoah. I got to put American Pharoah at number five because this is a horse that finally, we've been waiting for so long for this to happen. This is a horse that finally defied the odds and showed that it is possible. So I'm putting American Pharoah at number five. And the reason why American Pharoah is at number five is because he is an animal. He is an animal. So I have to give the human beings my other four because they are human beings. It's an animal. It's an animal. It's a horse, okay? So number five is American Pharoah for me. Number four, I'm going with LeBron James. Again, you heard my whole spiel on yesterday's Current Sports concerning LeBron James and the freak of nature that he is, being able to will his team against statistically the best team in the NBA and the Golden State Warriors, being, you know, LeBron having to do it by himself, not having the help of Kevin Love, not having the help of Kyrie Irving. What we saw on Sunday was just jaw-dropping. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what ensues tonight in Game 4. Going to be a fun game. It now goes to Cleveland, and maybe, you know, Cleveland has a bit of an edge. Steph Curry has to wake up. But right now, looking at LeBron James, he's doing something that we have not seen other greats of the game do, and that's do it in the NBA Finals alone. And he's doing that right now. He's a freak of nature. He's LeBron James. He's the best basketball player on the planet. And that's number four. Number three, I'm going with Miguel Cabrera. Talk about Triple Crowns, right? Miguel Cabrera is the traditional Triple Crown. Going back to that word traditional, he is the traditional Triple Crown winner when looking at modern sports today, okay? Let's not forget, a few seasons ago, Miguel Cabrera accomplished Triple Crown. We haven't, in baseball, we hadn't seen that in, oh my goodness, in years. So I got to go with Miggy. He's the only baseball player. I will stop what I'm doing to see what he does at bat. It's unbelievable what Miguel Cabrera does on a daily basis, donning a Detroit Tigers uniform. Number two, Lionel Messi. Folks, I give a lot of credit. You know, we had Eric Rutland on the show today. Lionel Messi, of course, being the best soccer player on the planet. I give a lot of credit to soccer players, folks. I mean, you are running constantly. It's not like basketball or football where there's breaks in between plays and there's these long, drawn-out TV timeouts and so on and so forth. In soccer, you are constantly running, non-stop. Lionel Messi, if you haven't watched him play, do yourself a favor. Go on YouTube, folks. I got to go with Lionel Messi. He's doing it in a sport that is so physically demanding. And it's really unbelievable just to watch him play. And also, number one, finally, my numero uno, who I think is the best athlete on the earth, Serena Williams. That's right. I got to give the nod to Serena Williams. What she is doing at 33 years old, now 20 majors, folks. It's unbelievable. And looking at over the weekend, what added to her legacy, folks, she did it with the flu. She was sick. She had the flu, folks. And watching her, you know, the game before the finals, just sitting there. I mean, and they said, you know, reporters reported afterwards, I mean, she, you know, labored herself to her hotel room. She was supposed to get up the next day for a practice round. She decided to stay in, rest up, didn't do anything, was in horrible shape. She was, she was throwing up. It was just bad. But to will herself to a 20th major championship at the French Open, she's on pace for a Grand Slam, folks. And she's so physically intimidating. We had the head coach of the women's tennis team won yesterday. And you know, we just had this interesting discussion about how physically intimidating Serena Williams is. I've never seen anything like her in the world of tennis. And, you know, she seems like she just keeps getting better with time. I got to go with Serena Williams. You just read my list, American Pharoah, LeBron James, Miguel Cabrera, Lionel Messi, and Serena Williams. Hey, tune in tomorrow. We'll debate and talk about it, or tweet me at AlMartinWKAR, or leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. I'll be sure to read it on tomorrow's show. Tomorrow, I talk with James Moore, former MSU fullback. Great. You've been listening to WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870. Take care and be easy, people.